I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here at Guitarnerds, we're big fans of iZotope software and their impressive range of plugins. And you, dear listener, get 10% off all iZotope plugins at iZotope.com with discount code NERDS10. Every Guitar Nerds podcast for well over five of its 10 years has been edited, polished, and repaired using iZotope's wonderful range of tools. From their Nectar suite to EQ, compress, and lightly add reverb to give the impression that Matt and I are in the same room, to the RX repair suite to deal with pops, clicks, and background noise. In fact, every sound sample that you hear on our podcast is mastered using iZotope's Ozone Mastering Suite, and I can even compare audio, EQ, and levels to other similar released material using iZotope's Tonal Recall. It's all very good, and believe it or not, there are a bunch of free plugins that you can try. A vinyl simulator for added character, the Ozone Imager for help visualizing your stereo mix, and a vocal doubler for added richness and depth to your vocals. Pretty neat. Check it all out at iZotope.com.
Oh, Matt. How does the moon cut his hair?
How does the moon cut his hair?
He clips it.
Oh.
He clips it. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Matt Knight.
I'm back, Matt, Mr. Joe.
You are back. Welcome back, Matt. Thank you for coming back.
Always for you, Joe.
And you've been away in Scandinavia on a cruise. Where is it? Norway.
You went Norway. Yep. Southampton, across the North Sea to the fjords of Norway and back again.
Wow.
On a cruise liner with 1,000 people, where the average age was probably about 75.
Was there a guitar shop on the ship?
No, there should be though. I should make that happen. No, there were some guitarists. There was a band. One guy played a Yamaha classical, electroacoustic classical. Don't know what model. Okay. Sounded pretty good. Straight into the PA. So, you know, very disappointed that there was no pedals involved. At one point, there was a guy doing some solo acoustic stuff on a Fender Acoustasonic Jazz Master.
God damn it. God damn it.
Straight into the PA.
Oh, God.
And then there was a three-piece band. Right. So keyboard, guitar, and drums. Uh-huh. And the guitarist played a Mexican Strat into a GT100 straight into the PA.
that is such a cruise band setup.
But what was annoying, right, is every time I went to see that band, or we went into the, it was, they were always playing in an area called the observatory, which was on the sort of top deck. They had a keyboard player who was basically doing like loads of different keyboard parts, but also different sounds. They did like Love Me Do by the Beatles, but she was playing the harmonica on keyboards, of course. But every time I went up, there was one instrument they never played, but it was Lean lent up against a GK bass amp, and that was a headless status bass.
Wow.
Like a carbon fiber one as well.
Wow. That's like a $3,000 plus instrument.
It was probably worth more than the entirety of the equipment of the band on board. And I never saw anyone play it.
That's a damn shame.
But yeah, there was there anything else? No, there was basically just a three-piece band, violin, double bass, and guitar that just like the three essential instruments that just walked around the ship just playing the same 15 songs, basically.
For what? For a whole week?
For seven days. It's like, oh, it's that one again. But yeah, no, it was nice. I did see one guitar shop in Norway. Four Sound, which are Norway's largest guitar shop. In fact, I think they're the only chain of guitar shops in Norway. Yeah. But everything you'd sort of usually expect. No sort of major surprises. But when I came home, I did have a little gift, Joe. I've just got some new pedals from 13055 Effects.
Think about that, dear listener. Think about those
if you've got a calculator, numbers.
Type that out and have a look at what pedal company name that looks like.
They are not real pedals. I should probably post a picture on Facebook. This is from, I've got the piece of paper here, the Effector cable mascot from 13055 Effects. These are a series of mini Gachapon toys. So Gachapon are the plastic capsules that you put some money in and you turn a little silver control and a little plastic ball falls out and there's a little toy inside. You get them in the UK. I think you get them in America, but mainly in Japan. They are everywhere and you get tiny little toys that look like everything from plastic sushi to mini guitar pedals that definitely aren't Boss pedals. They're 13055 pedals. Someone sent me the link to these and I was like, I just have to buy them. I bought them from AliExpress. First time ever ordering on AliExpress. Good service, but I do feel terrible that I ordered six tiny plastic pedals all the way from China.
What effects did you get?
The DS1 distortion. The OD1 overdrive.
Nice, classic.
The DM1 delay. The PH1 phaser. Just as a trend here. FZ1 fuzz and the CE1 chorus.
Oh, wow.
And what's great is there's a little space underneath where you can run a cable so it looks like they're all plugged in together. You can click the pedal on and off and you can turn all the controls.
Wow. But there's nothing. No, it doesn't actually function.
I wish they made noises. That would be so good. But yes, the Effector Mate Club, the Effector Cable Mascot.
Right.
From Kitan Club, if you want to follow them. Kitan Club. I had to use Google Translate to know what the manual was actually saying. You can follow them on Kitan Club _official. I'm sure there'll be a few words at some point. But yeah, check them out. They do the Effector cable mascot series. So I had those waiting for me when I arrived in the post box. So can't plug them in, but a little bit of fun nonetheless.
Yes, they certainly look very cool. They're great for, you know, for people like you who just collect everything to do with Effector pedals. Next week, is it next week? It's the guitar show, which listeners anywhere other than the UK, the guitar show is the, not that imaginatively named, one of the biggest guitar shows that happens in the UK. It happens in Birmingham every year. It's in a new venue in Birmingham. It's actually in Solihull this year rather than rather than Bingley Hall, right in the middle of Birmingham. I do like Birmingham, so I like going up there, but Solihull I'm less familiar with, and it's a little bit of an arsehole of a station to get to be honest. But it's fine. I'm willing to do it. I'm going for the whole thing. I'm going for both days. I'm even going to go up the night before. I'm going to call round some of the, you know, our friend luthiers and and pedal and amp maker, see if anyone's up the night before and fancies a drink and a bite to eat. Because I'm very much looking forward to it. First guitar show of the year. And Matt, you're not coming with me.
No, I'm sad.
Yeah.
I would love to. It's just where I live now. For some reason, every so often, as in every weekend, they do rail replacement service halfway towards where I am, towards London. So it's a train to Shenfield, which is arse end of nowhere.
Yes.
A bus to Newbury Park, the tube, then all the way to...
Oh, yes, because Newbury Park's right on the end of the tube, last station
Park
on the east.
The end of the central line to the east.
Yeah.
Then it's going all the way across to Euston, where I then have to get a train up to Birmingham, and then I think where the thing is, there's, I guess, then a taxi. I think it worked out. No, I think it's where it is. You have to go to some...
Oh, yeah, you can't even go to Birmingham. It's. I think I had to go... Yeah, some other station out of London that wasn't like Liverpool Street or Euston to get straight to Solihull. And even from Solihull Station, you're then a cab journey away from the venue as it is.
Yeah, so I think it was going to take me 5.5 hours. I ain't got time for that. Well, actually, that's a lie. I do have time for it, just not that one weekend, unfortunately. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm absolutely gutted. There is a huge... range of brands there
it really does. And today, I mean, not when you're listening to it, dear listener, so if you're following this event and you're in the UK, you'll have seen the announcement, I assume, but they've announced today that Peter Hook is going to be doing a bit of a session there on the Reverb Live stage, which is really cool. I mean, you know, legendary bass player, you know, fantastic guys.
I also saw that our good friend, I was actually texting him today, Perry from Pendulum will be there with Line 6. He does some crazy stuff live.
That's wonderful.
He's got a really wicked Line 6 rig, and he uses a Boss SY300 as well, so he does some crazy synth stuff with that.
That's very cool.
But yeah, interestingly, and I guess maybe we'll talk a bit about it in the news, but DOD are there.
They're back.
I don't know who they're exhibiting with. I don't know who they might be distributed by in Europe. I'm not sure.
I've been aware that they'd been bought some time ago, and I think it wasn't something we're all supposed to talk about. But I don't know the ins and outs. I don't know the details of who buy or in what capacity they're going to be back. But it's exciting, isn't it? What a company, you know, what a brilliant, legendary effects manufacturer that have just been, you know, vacant for the last little while.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously everyone thought they had gone the way of the Dodo, and it looks like they've been bought, and the original designers, or some of the original designers, I think, are back on board. Obviously it means things like the Whammy are coming back. There's obviously lots of chance for perhaps some new stuff as well. Mm. So, yeah, it looks like quite a few brands, I think. Your friends KMA will have some pedals there.
KMA will be there. Bruce will be there. Yeah, that'd be great. Ashdown are actually exhibiting as well.
Are you going to get dragged into work, are you, Joe?
No, I'm not. I did last year, but I didn't. They didn't ask me this year, and I think it's because last year I was like, yeah, no problem. And I think I spent all of 10 minutes actually on the Ashdown stand. And so fortunately, I've got away from that one. I'm looking forward to seeing Carl Longbottom and Carl Longbottom Guitars. He's got a couple of models for us to take away, Matt, which is very nice. We'll talk about them in more depth when we've got them, but he's the fellow dear listener. We've spoken about him a couple of times. He makes like hollow body versions of Strats, not with F holes, so they're like look like normal Strats and Tellies, but they're completely hollow. So
yeah, and our friends Emprise will be there. I think obviously Joe, you'll have a chance to meet the people behind those amps. Obviously, we spoke about them a fair bit as well.
That'd be great. High Watts are going to be back with loads of stuff. They actually wanted to give me some stuff as well to take away, but I'm getting the train up and I can't very well take the whatever it is. It's a 215 and a 410 in one cabinet and a 200 watt head. So I can't.
Yeah, just take that on your back. That'd be fine. Thorpey, he messaged me and was like, "You going to be there?" And I was like, "No." No, I'm sure there's going to be loads of great people there. And yeah, not being in London has its disadvantages at times like this. Mikey from Redbeard.
Yeah.
Dan at Chapman. Obviously, the guys at Merchant City Music, they might have a lot of Pink Reverends back on display.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of awesome stuff to talk about.
It's going to be great. And JD and Naomi from Guitar Nerds are both coming. So that'd be really good. I think it's going to be a great show. And dear listener, we will have a bunch to report after the show.
If anyone listening hasn't looked, Solihull Station, Shirley Station are approximately 2 miles from Cranmore Park. If you go to Birmingham, it's 8 miles away. So you need to get to Solihull Station and then take a bus. slightly annoying for me. At times like this, I wish I could drive.
That's the problem that you and me made, Matt, with growing up in the middle of cities is we never needed to. And now that we've both moved out of cities, suddenly we really need to.
It would still take me about 4 hours, but at least I know I could get there and then leave when I want, rather than being dictated by the train or bus. I guess. But yeah, I think, you know, hopefully, I think the reason it moved venues because the last venue burnt down. I think that's why they had to move. But I think it's a slightly bigger venue this time, so I think there's a bit more space to expand. It'll be nice to see it in a new place. And obviously with some shows like NAMM perhaps becoming a bit smaller and less people going, these shows might sort of pick up a little bit more.
Definitely. I'm certainly more excited about it than I ever have been. It looks like it's going to be really good. Now, Matt, recently, you and I have been checking out this fantastic thing that, dear listener, I want to talk to you about. It's called Elk. We mentioned it on the podcast a few months ago, but relatively briefly, because we were going to try it out. Now, Elk, or Elk Live, elk.live is the website. They make it's essentially an interface that allows zero latency streaming, and that interface hooks up with a platform that they have on elk.live where you can have a band practice with other musicians real time with no latency. So it offers like a camera hookup so you can see each other. There's a mixer available so you can mix the tracks depending on, you know, where everyone is. Panning options are all there. Really handily, it's even got some great routing options. So, you know, if I wanted to practice live with Matt and I wanted to use Neural DSP, the Tone King, I can route Elk Live via my DAW, and so I can apply effects to it, which is very, very good.
I guess for anyone, you know, who's listening in front of a computer, you can always Google it. But if you're not, it's basically a little yellow box, a really cool little interface that allows two ins. You've got two different headphones, mini jack or quarter inch. Stereo out if you're going into monitors, and then a connection that just simply says the internet. Yes. You do also have USB power over USB-C, USB connection, and an optical in and out and MIDI in and out. But effectively, guitar in, you've got to hardwire this as well. We should say this is for...
That's how it deals with... Yeah. You have to connect. That was the first problem I had, was because my office is the furthest point from my router. And my router is downstairs in the lounge, like like wedged behind a load of stuff in the corner. I had to like try and bring my entire setup to practice down to it.
Well, so, I solved that, Joe.
Oh, yeah. What did you do?
A simple little. I'll see if I can find the. Let me see if I can find the actual thing that I bought, but. Basically, I bought from a company called TP-Link. You can buy a pass-through power line adapter kit. So this is where you plug it into the wall and it takes the internet from your router travels it through the power line of your house and then to another plug point. And then that plug point has a Ethernet cable that comes out of it. And then you can put that into your house.
Oh.
They aren't much money. I think I bought a dual adapter kit. It was 36 quid. Right. And you got two. So yeah, that's a great way to extend from the router to anywhere where your house is, your home office or otherwise. And it works really, really well. We struggled to try it before Christmas purely because when I was in London, the internet decided to die. but now that I'm, believe it or not, in the countryside and further away from the city, the internet's working much better. And it's been great fun. I mean, you know, I think the interesting thing with this, in some ways it's come after obviously the pandemic.
Perhaps, if this had happened in the height of 2020, I think, you know, I'd have bought shares in the company.
But I think the interesting thing is now is that so many people work remotely, so many people are based at home, and so many people like me and you, Joe, have been long-term friends and musicians, but perhaps we can't, you know, I can't get down to Angmering and you can't come over to Suffolk and, you know, and I know a lot of people, speaking to some friends of mine who have just started new bands where they've got, you know, a singer in London and a drummer in Nottingham and then a bass player in Wales. And this is a great way to just go, well, let's rehearse, you know, even if it's once a week, once a month, whatever, remotely, or just have a jam. And like you say, because you can route through plugins,
yeah,
you get a great sound. It really is, in some ways, kind of... It is a bit magic on how it actually works, because if you try and do it yourself, I mean, it's like doing this podcast, I guess, Joe, is that the software we use kind of balances out the latency and auto corrects the latency, but we're just talking.
Yeah.
The fact you want to be able to, you know, music a few mil can make a big difference.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Like a, you know, we don't even have to talk about drums, but like a bass playing with a guitar, like you've got, it has to be, those two things have to be on the money. There's no way you can do that over a Zoom call or anything like that. Like even the slightest latency would ruin it. And it's why people don't, you know, online over calls. But
absolutely. But because you've got two inputs on the front, you could have guitar and vocals, for example, or guitar and keys, or however you want to run it. But it's a great way of getting together with friends to play music and not do it over something like Teams or Zoom, like you say, where there's a lot of latency, there's bad audio quality. This is just the best way that you could do it. And I think it's a really superb option for more people to play together. I think it'd be interesting if they did some stuff like, it'd be tricky in some ways, but imagine if it was almost like forums where you could like get together and loads of people were plugged in and you could jam over or show, you know, new gear or something like that. Certainly a great way to demo stuff,
yeah,
to other people in real time.
I think it's really, really good. I hope that the company continues to expand. Bjorn, the guy who invented Elk, is a really lovely fella. It just seems like a great way to bring musicians together that wouldn't necessarily be able to do it otherwise. Like I'd love the opportunity to be able to have like a live jam with, you know, like Philip Carter over in Mississippi. That would be great if we had the ability to do that completely live via Elk. You know, I think this product can open such doors for such creativity. I hope it gets popular.
Yeah, and I think that just, you know, with the casual musician rather than, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine who works in a relatively high-end studio in London, and he says that, you know, they've got their own, you know, they paid tens of thousands of pounds to basically have their own internet connections. They're not coming off a junction box, you know, right. So their internet speed is, download speed is like 1,000 megabits a second.
Wow.
But they're live streaming. He said that they're doing sessions now because certain, you know, certain producers, for example, want the sound of certain rooms or certain desks. He said that they're doing things now where they've got like an orchestra in the live room, but they're live streaming the session to another desk in LA. And obviously, like, that is extreme. And, you know, you're taking like 96 channels of like high quality analog desk and then like piping it down a custom internet connection to the other side of the world. at extreme cost, and this is, I can't remember how much this is now, Joe. You have to, I can't remember if you've got it in front of you.
Yeah, I can tell you because it's handily on their website. It's in US dollars, it's $340. In euros, it's 370. 300 in pounds, or in Swedish krona, it's 3,725. So more expensive for them.
Yeah, but I think, you know, what's that? The cost of a decent interface. So, you know, if you're in a band, you're living far apart, you can't always rehearse, I think this is a great way to just get together with people and play music.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. A super cool product. Yeah, I'm excited to do more stuff with it. And, you know, dear listeners, do check it out. This is a cool way to be able to practice with people that you wouldn't necessarily be able to practice with.
So. Can people remotely join in a session even if they don't have it? So if we were going to, like, demo some stuff, Joe, can you...
Can you try? I don't know. I don't think so. I think the interface probably does something quite important in the, you know, the path to zero latency.
Something we'll have to investigate. But might be a good way of demoing products in the future.
Yeah, what else do you want? I mean, I think really the deal is, I think he's just trying to develop more stuff to make this easier and easier. So. See what Elk has to offer in the future as well. I think it will be exciting.
And you can use an iPad as well, which is amazing.
Can you?
You can get an iOS app. Obviously, a lot of iPads now, especially I've got an iPad Mini 6, and most of those now have USB-C, so they're just far more compatible with products out there as well. So that makes it so much better.
Yes, that is better.
To use. But yeah, no, a really, really cool product. And I guess we'll just keep using it and keep testing it. And
yeah.
You know, see where it goes, but it'd definitely be interesting if anyone out there decides to buy one and jam with a few friends and let us know how you get on.
I'll do a jam with you. Anyone who buys one, I would love to do more live practice. So do that.
Yes. Do that.
Anyway, let's talk about some other stuff. This week, I headed over to Ashdown HQ over in Malden in Essex. I really don't like going to Essex, but I do like going to Ashdown HQ. Can never find a good pub, Matt. I can never find one.
Why, anyway, Essex?
Yeah, true. No, it's a chain pub, though. It's a Slug and Lettuce, or I just want an independent. I just want a little old man pub with, you know, Guinness, a dartboard, ideally, you know, stuff like that. Anyway, so I went over to Ashdown. I went with Tim, the guitarist from Polymath, because I think I've mentioned this before, dear listener, we touched upon it briefly. I didn't want to talk about it too much when we were talking about the Black Star St. James, but Ashdown have been developing some guitar amps. One of the guitar amps we've been working on, it essentially, dear listener, I don't know if you'll remember, I don't know how much these made it outside of the UK, but Hayden, which were Ashdown's guitar arms. Do you remember those?
Yes.
And quite a few people were playing them, like Biffy Clyro were playing them. Like, they were big in the math scene. If you remember, like Tom from Alpha Male Tea Party was playing one, Dan from Cleft, like plenty of people. I think Venot played one for a bit. And don't hold me to that, Mike, if you didn't play one. I think you did, but... But the Mofo series were very popular. They were lunchbox, you know, sort of tiny Terra sized chassis. Anyway.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
I thought this sounded great. And like about a year ago, we had one, a bit more than a year ago, we had one knocking around at Ashdown HQ. And me and Dan, one of the guys who owns it, why aren't we doing this anymore? It's a really good sounding head. So we did some tweaking and we relaunched it as an Ashdown, because they're doing Ashdown amplifiers, and they've had a series called the AGM for a while. It's more a Marshally style thing, but the Mofo is very much its own kettle of fish. It can kind of do a nice Fender clean, but there's an awful lot of gain on tap. And so what we did was we put the essentially what was the original Hayden Mofo with a few tweaks into a new Ashdown chassis, which they are calling the MF this time, just to make it slightly different in name. But the MF series we've done in a 30 watt all valve head, which we've included two notes, so it's two notes loaded with six cab IRs accessible on the front panel, so full load box and everything, so you can go straight into a DAW. But it's an all valve head, valve preamp, valve power amp, so we've done that, and we're working on a little 15 watt version, which I think is absolutely brilliant, which is a little less all singing all dancing. It's it doesn't have the two note stuff on it. It's just gain, volume, a three band EQ, but we've included a load box essentially, so you can just run straight from the DI out on the back into your DAW. It's an all valve head, and it's still, you're getting 15 watts of everything you want. Which I think is very cool. I've no idea how that works and why that doesn't blow up, by the way. But Dave Green, you know, the guy behind Green Amps, who's designed the amplifiers for Ashdown, assures me it's fine. But on the MF, it was like we got an ECC 81, 82, and a pair of 83s in the preamp, and four EL84s in the power section, and it sounds great. It sounds really good. I was really, really happy with it. But of course, I'm not a great guitarist, so I got Tim down to do a bit of messing around with it. We got a bit carried away. I'm going to play a little bit of it actually, but I got a little bit carried away because also Dave Green, the designer, has been working on a few pedals. One of the pedals I loved. He loves preamps, and he's taken a treble booster. And what would essentially is the essence of an MXR microamp, and put them together in a pedal. So you've got one treble booster control and one full boost control, basically. Okay. But to be able to blend them together is really interesting. Really interesting way to kind of collapse the front end of a valve amp and get some really fuzzy, saturated tones. Anyway, this is a little snippet of what Tim was doing.
Thank you.
So, yeah, there you go. So, like, super, it does that super heavily saturated thing. Anyway, I had the best time.
It had real vibes of kind of Queens of the Stone Age, Desert Sessions, Josh Homm kind of thing. I thought that was quite cool. Almost like a real peaked mid-range that kind of gave it a sort of, not too much of like a Cocked Wah sound, but, you know, I think that was, yeah, it sounded really good. Is it... So you've got two boosts. Are they running in series or are they running in parallel? Do you know that, Joe?
I don't know. I imagine it's series.
Yeah, so one's running into the other. Exactly, so you're probably slamming one into the other.
Which I think it's the full into the treble because that's the order of the controls on the front.
Into the controls. And then straight into the front of the Hayden amp.
Yeah, the Ashdown amp as it's now. Yeah,
as it's now known.
Yeah, but it was really good. It really, I had a great time. That was the little 15 watt, which I think is going to be like 500, like 400 quid maybe when they put it out. And it's all from the UK custom shop. They're going to make it in small amounts because Ashdown aren't expecting to compete with it. You know, any big brands for guitar amp, they're a bass amp brand. They know that. So this is just something fun to do at the custom shop. But I just had a great time. Like, you know. Making cool guitar sounds.
And like you said, how was that captured? Was that straight out of the two notes out or was that mic'd up?
The two notes is only available on the 30 watt version. Okay. So on the 15 it's just dead simple. So that is actually a Lewitt 440 Pure on a single 12 inch cream back.
Wow. Sounded great. Yeah. Was that over a backing track or were you playing live as well?
I built some backing tracks for Tim to sort of play along to so he didn't get quite as lost as he often does. So. Yeah, I gave him some nice looping backing tracks all in his favourite key. His favourite key is D because that's the, you know, the polymath tuning is normally D standard, often D standard. So I gave him stuff in there. I gave him one track on the day in E. And it absolutely threw him. Like, for just jamming solos over the top, he was like, everything's in a different place. I'm so not used to it.
Songs written in that one key, are they?
Almost all songs are written in D, yeah. It's we realised it's a problem now. We need to get out of that. Get out of that habit.
Oh, dear. It sounded great. And will the pedal be making an appearance as well then, will it, Joe, or is it just...
Yeah, the pedal, they've actually already sort of soft launched on their website. I can't remember what it's called, like the Full Boost or something like that. But it's you'll find it, dear listener, if you go on to the... I think it's only available through Ashdown because, again, it's just stuff we make through the custom shop. But it's on the Ashdown website under... It will be under guitar gear rather than bass gear, but it's really good. He did Dave Green's been working on a number of other things as well. He did a fuzz pedal where essentially he's taken the two transistors and run them backwards. And because it's only receiving 9 volts, it's not enough to make them to ruin them, but it creates a really interesting mid-peaked vintage fuzz style tone. He's basically just doing a bit of experimenting, you know, without... I guess whenever they make a bass product, they're like, right, it's got to be exactly right because, you know, they're a big bass brand. But with guitar stuff, they're like, yeah, we're just going to try this and see what happens.
Yeah, I to be honest, I didn't realize there were so many pedals. I was trying to find it. I can't see it, Joe, but I have just found the Geezer Butler Pedal of Doom, which looks ridiculous because it's got 2 VU meters on it.
Oh, Matt, look, I got one right next to me.
Oh, for everyone listening, unlucky. that looks mental.
Oh, the Geezer Butler Pedal of Doom was, it was one of those things where I think Dave Green said to Geezer Butler, what controls would you like on this pedal? And Geezer Butler said, yes. Because there are the most amount of rotary controls you can imagine. He wanted switchable EQ, so he wanted to have an A and B. So he's got one foot switch that never turns off, just turns it between A and B, and you've got a 5-band EQ that deals with both of those.
And then a Doom control.
Which is a drive. It's just a drive with it, like, far... I mean, honestly, I don't... Like, Geezer Butler wanted it like this. This is how they spec'd it, but... As far as I'm concerned, it's unusable past 12. Like, it's just,
it's just ridiculous spluttery saturation past there, like no note clarity at all. But, you know, it's really usable for the first half of that, of the rotary control on the game, or the Doom control, as they call it.
The one for me still, just to finish this Ashdown discussion, is the Interstellar. I still think that's the best looking one.
Yes, the Guy Pratt Interstellar head. Yeah, it's very cool. It looks, Dennis, if you've never seen one, it looks like a big sort of PA head from the 70s, which is obviously what Guy was going after, because Guy also wanted the column cabs that Ashdown have made. And dear listener, again, you should check them out if you haven't seen them. They're 310s, but it's a vertical 310 with a horn on top. So they're very slim and tall, like an old PA column, basically. So
very, very cool indeed.
Yes, indeed, indeed. But we did have a good time. And also, I took up my old polymath rig for Ashdown to sell on their B-stock. So it's up for sale at the moment, dear listener, if you want the old polymath rig. Comes in a flight case with the polymath logo spray painted on it.
I don't know if that adds or takes away any value. Yeah. Just remind the listener of what that is, because you had a pretty insane custom set, for that.
It's a CTM 300, which is their 300 watt all valve head, kind of based after an SVT1. So it's that head flight case, and I have two 115 cabs, but they are in 410 chassis. So it's a 115 in a 410 chassis, so a big cabinet, and the cabinets have been cotton wool lined as well. So they're so very that vintage muffled sound. That's what it is. But yeah, so they're all up there.
So what are you getting instead then, Joe?
Well, I've been instead these days, I'm still touring the same thing that I took on my last tour, which was a pair of the Neo 12-inch Ashdown cabs. So just two single 12s that I can obviously mount on top of each other and still have kind of a, you know, I'm so used to bass rigs being a bit taller to being kind of head height. So that's sort of handy. And I'm actually, for my sins, I am using the Ashdown original 500, which is a Class D head, which I essentially just use as a volume control and then run a preamp off my board to get the sound, which, as you pointed out, Matt, is the Geezer Butler Peddler Doom.
Is it really?
Yeah. It was the John Young double drive that I was using as kind of a preamp, but now it's the Geezer Butler.
Wow. Okay. Thing. Now we know the secret to the polymath tone is Geezer Butler.
Yeah. Why not? Why not? Indeed.
Well, fair enough. Fair enough. So no more super vintage Branton Bonanza at polymath gigs.
No, I'm just emulating it now in a much more lightweight fashion, which really goes against everything I stand for. But you know,
be fair, you don't really want to be carrying all that around, do you?
I toured it for a long time. You know, and so I've earned this bit, this lightweight bit. I didn't get big enough to have a roadie, so this is the alternative.
Fair enough.
Anyway, did you see, Matt, did you see that Trent guitars were on the Brits? Dear listeners who aren't from the UK, I'm sorry, I feel like this podcast has got a little bit UK-centric, but the Brits are, you know, one of our terrible award ceremonies for bad music and stuff like that, that, you know, people who listen to Radio 1 and things like that vote for. But Wet Leg played on there, on the Brits, and two of their four guitar-playing members, their bass player and one of their guitarists, played Trent's. Maybe three. Maybe there were three.
Yeah. I did see it only after you mentioned it, because I think the Brits was overwhelmingly... certainly me, was amazed by Sam Smith's inflated rubber outfit. possibly one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen in my entire life. So it was a shame that the general vibe of things was overshadowed by that. But very cool to see Trent on stage and see how far they've come in that space of time. I mean, when did we first start talking about them? Not that long ago.
I don't know, Matt, if it was that long ago, because the pandemics made time move in a funny way. But it couldn't have been, I don't know, 2018, 2019?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it was a bit later than that. I do feel it was somewhere in the middle of the pandemic, but I can't honestly remember. And then I've just had a look, and then one of the guitar players is playing some sort of pink Mustang lookalike. That's not the Trent, is it?
That's right.
Different. I don't know what that is.
They've always had interesting guitars, even before they were playing Trent, because I think you saw there were some of those weird modern vintage Fenders that they did. I can't remember the name now. I'm saying that wrong, aren't I, dear listener? But I can't remember exactly what it is. But something like that, yeah. So, like, just weird, kind of quirky, affordable Fenders was kind of their deal. But now a pair of very lovely looking. I mean, the Trent bass has been a mainstay for Wet Leg for a while. But I wasn't aware that guitars were going to be there as well. I mean, fantastic. I was like, I saw the opening of the Brits, and essentially the last shot on the Brits of the guitar player at the last note of the song was her holding up a Trent. And I was like, yeah, Elliot, that's great. Well done, Elliot Trent.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
That's amazing. I'm just on the Instagram as I usually am when we talk about Trent, and I've just seen one of the basses that he made, which is in like, I guess it's, I want to say like a light purple, sparkly purple with like an orange scratch plate and then like split kind of Mustang pickup.
Yeah.
I guess. They just look wicked. They just look absolutely wicked.
Yeah, they're really good. And he winds his pickups himself, Elliot Trent, as well. You know, so they're very cool.
There's just, I do love that purple colour, that sort of mauvey purple colour. One day, we keep talking about it, but one day I will own one.
They're definitely on our list. They're great guitars. They're great value for money. I guess, you know, I think the waiting list is pretty high for them at the moment because Elliot's just been, his guitars are just so popular now. And I'm sure them appearing on the Brits is just going to add to that that lead time.
Yeah, I think it's, and I think it's nice that it's still, Elliot, it's still making the same guitars that we spoke about. And he's just going, I can make as many as I can make. And, you know, I think it's, I guess there's not much we can really talk about on this. I don't know if we talked about it last week, Joe, but obviously the announcement from Chapman that they can't make the UK-built Chapman guitars, and they're awaiting, or I guess everyone's awaiting a statement from the UK Guitar Builders, which was the new kind of collaborative UK custom shop building guitars. You know, how difficult it must be to sustain a business and take that next level. So I think it's great that Elliot's just going, yeah, I'm going to make as many as I can. And he's really busy. And hopefully he's turned that into his full-time job.
Yeah, I'm sure he has. Yeah, they seem to be in great demand.
Indeed. But yeah, no, great to see a small UK builder on such a big platform.
Absolutely. Now, this week, for topic of the week, we do have quite a substantial topic to get through. There's also some news, and you and I have prattled on for a little while. So let's blast through an article of the want to talk about, Matt. There are kind of three possibles. The Strymon Cloudburst, I mentioned it briefly last week, dear listener. We've got the DoD return, which I guess we've kind of covered, and Electro Harmonix have added yet again to their catalogue as well.
I want to talk quickly because we have got a lot to get through, but I think it's a cool thing worth mentioning. I want to talk about the Electro Harmonix Slapback Echo. Because I think it's a nice reissue of a vintage bit of their kit, basically.
Oh, is it? Is it a reissue of it? I didn't know that. I thought they were just like plumbing out a thing that most delay pedals can do into a single, almost, you know, like I guess in many ways the same as Strymon are with the Cloudburst, like taking part of an algorithm out and putting it in one unit. But that's not the case with this.
No, it's not. So the Slapback Echo was a fairly rare 70s, late 70s electro-harmonics pedal that came in the same chassis as your Holy Grail or your Small Stone phaser or the chorus, and effectively was a super short delay pedal. So where you had a lot of people doing analog delay pedals that were doing, at that time, I guess, 300 milliseconds, like a Deluxe Memory Man. From them, they were just going, well, no, a lot of people just want that kind of slapback tape sound. So you effectively go, you've got a gain control for your preamp, which gives you plus 20 dB of boost, which wasn't on the original. The original was just a blend control, which you've still got on here. So that blends between wet and dry. And then you've got a delay switch or a time switch that goes between 45 milliseconds, 65 milliseconds, and 100 milliseconds.
That's very cool, just having those on like fixed positions.
Yeah, I just think set and forget, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
but I mean, I quite often set one of my delay pedals to a fixed delay time, and I just have it on in the background all the time.
Exactly, I think, how I use delay, just as a slapback on all the time.
You know, so, you know, and I think for a lot of those people going for that kind of Chet Atkins thing or that old school country thing, you know what? You don't need to mess around. You don't need to find the time that you want. There's three switches and that's it. There's not even a feedback control. You know, it's just turn it on. Which time do you want and how much delay signal do you want? And that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. And it's in mini pedal format and it's $81, I think.
Yeah, super cheap. Super cheap. I think this is quite cool, actually. I wonder how easy it would be to mod it if you really wanted to kind of do something crazy. And I'm sure someone probably will. But yeah, I think it's just a nice bit of news to touch on. And yet another launch from Electro-Harmonics. I think they've probably got more guitar pedals out than anyone. Even Boss.
Well, yeah. Probably, I mean, they never discontinue things. That's
No,
that's the thing with Electro-Harmonics.
They don't seem to, anyway. I'm sure there's a few things going on in the background, but they certainly don't seem to discontinue things very often.
Yes, yeah, that's certainly the case. Anyway, let's move on. Let's do our topic of the week. Now, dear listener, if the sixth episode in this series is your first episode, every week for this series, we are spinning a wheel made up of all our top $10 tier Patreon supporters. A name is selected each week, and that person then gets to decide what Matt and I talk about. Last week, Andy Hoffler won, and he gave me quite a substantial number of things to talk about. Let me read you through Andy's reply to me. He said, okay, I think I have two subjects for you. One, custom amps. I recently spec'd out my spec'd custom amp because I was not happy with the available options on the market. If you would spec out an amp, what would you go for? I'm thinking circuit, channels, reverb, tube choice, wattage, etc. And of course, what would you use the amp for? I wanted my custom amp to be pedal friendly, but with some character. So I went for a 59 Bassman JTM style circuit, but with more power and headroom. I want to use it with a band, but it sits in my living room as well. So design and size was important. At least it should be easy to use. TMB controls volume for two parallel channels, but just one input and a switchable master. He's also a bit afraid because he couldn't test it before. That's the negative side of a custom order, I suppose. So that's the first part of his question. The second part is pedal booze. Pair your favorite pedals with a suitable drink. His Blue Colander Crooked Axis is a bit like Lagavulin 16. It has some sweetness, but it's got the smoke to make it interesting. And it really has some punch as well. Just as its liquid counterpart. You may include non-alcoholic drinks as well, if that's more appropriate. Let's deal with the first part of this question.
So I've not heard of this brand before. I think they're a German brand. But yeah, I guess Andy makes a good point, and it is the fact that you can't try it before you buy it. And I guess so. Well, I guess it's the same with guitars, but with amps, like, so the smallest component can make such a big difference, and sure, you can't change it. Like, realistically, things like the power transformer make a massive difference to how an amp sounds, and you can't just go and change the power transformer in an amp like you can change the pickups in a guitar.
Right.
And the more you change things, like, you know, custom amps, so 59 Bassman JTM style circuit. Obviously, we know that the JTM was originally a Bassman clone, obviously. And I think that's an interesting thing in its own right, because they couldn't, Marshall couldn't bring in Fender amps because of the trade embargo at the time. So they made their basically a direct clone of the Bassman, but because of the components that you could buy in England compared to the components you could buy in America, meant that you ended up with quite a wildly different sounding amplifier. So, you know, you could spec something out, but depending on the components used, it could be totally different.
Sure.
And then as soon as you go, well, I want to add more power, more headroom, you've sort of got a different amp. You know, you end up a bit in a situation where you're like, oh yeah, I want a Ferrari, but I want to put a, you know, Fiat engine in it or whatever.
Fiat make Ferrari. What are you talking about?
Oh, I don't know, Joe. I tried to pick someone that definitely wouldn't be associated.
They're the same company.
Oh dear. But anyway, so yeah, I don't know. It's volume for two parallel channels, I guess, a bit like a Bassman as well. Just one input and a switchable master.
The thing is, I guess if you were going to spec up, if you're going to make your own amplifier, in Andy's case, he's done it because what he wanted wasn't available on the market. I don't necessarily feel like that. So it's a little bit easier for me, you know, to choose something, because I very much feel like what I want exists. What about you? I guess, Matt, you do still buy weird boutique things. I am perfectly happy with Vox AC30. It is just the best. I guess if I was going to spec up something, I'd maybe add some attenuation on there so it was usable in a few more situations.
I think my choice of amps is usually born out of the fact that I'm one of those, or can be one of those cork-sniffing losers that doesn't want to buy the same thing that anyone else can buy. realistically. But, you know, I think we talked about it a fair bit when we were talking about Emprise amps and, you know, taking those classic Fender circuits and making some changes to key components to perhaps give you more headroom or something like that. But realistically, the amps that I spec out, if I was ever going to spec out my own custom amp, is single channel, potentially non-master volume,
really?
Medium wattage, you know, kind of pedal board friendly, I guess you would say. I don't tend to spec out things with drive just because I have a lot of drive pedals. And I prefer a Fender type circuit because I like the sparkly clean. But, you know, that's why I wouldn't say, oh, I want a Marshall, but then I want a Fender-style reverb. I don't feel that those two things would go together.
Yeah.
You know. But ultimately, the thing is that you can't try it beforehand. But if you can try some amps from the brand and you know what kind of thing they do, you know, like we tried Emprise and you know that they do a great Fender, you know, black panel-style circuit, then go ahead and say, yeah, I want that, but I want some changes. You pretty much know what ballpark you're going to be in. But to have never tried the brand and spec stuff out, that's always a really, really difficult thing.
Yeah, yeah. What is your single favorite amplifier then, Matt? You know, does it exist? Everything that you want in an amplifier? I
think mine is still that Morgan PR12.
Really?
You know, volume, reverb, bass and treble, 12 watts, high headroom, 6v6. And the thing I like about the reverb circuit is it's really big, really splashy, despite the head being slightly smaller than usual. And that you've got a reverb control and a dwell control. So you can kind of have super splashy reverb, but then you've got like effectively a mix.
Right.
I don't really tend to use effects loops. But that's why I like things like the Micronaut, which we've got coming in the next couple of days as well. So, you know, 4 watts, still loud enough for pedal boards. single channel, super easy to use. I kind of just like the amp to set and forget for me. I don't want to do too much in the amp itself.
Right. Yeah. You want yours to be a pedal platform. Yeah. I mean, yeah. You have big pedal boards, so.
Exactly. The only thing that I would potentially do differently if I was being ridiculous is have two of the same amp built into one box. So you could run it in stereo and then you ran it out into two sides of a 412 or something. But that's just crazy talk. But it's quite interesting looking at this brand, Specht Amps, S-P-E-C-H-T. They're a German brand. Finest customized tube amplifiers. So you can totally custom spec out your entire amp. Everything is one-off by the looks of it. And you're involved in every phase of development of your custom amplifier. Which is pretty cool.
Look fantastic. The some of the pictures of these, the attention to detail, the point to point.
Yeah, wiring, I mean, it's,
all of this looks very good.
I mean, they match all the tubes. They've got some fancy equipment for tube matching. I'm looking at their website now. But you can basically do anything. So custom turret boards, free choice of tubes and transformers, different loudspeakers, tuning of the amp's gain structure. Selection of different valves from different brands, including new old stock, real spring reverb, tremolo, different switches, switchable bias, feedback loops, bias pots, output transformer changes. There's literally like, they don't go, this is an amp you can buy. They're just like, tell us what you want and we'll spec it out. So by the sounds of it, I'm sure whatever Andy gets will be awesome.
Yes, yeah, I agree. Now, the second part of Andy's question was pairing, it was pedal booze. So we've got pair our favourite pedals with a suitable drink, which is an interesting one. We'll just do one of these each, Matt. Anything spring to mind for you?
Joe, you drink way more booze than I do. So this is, I don't know, this is a tricky one for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to look at what pedals I've got and then go, I don't know. I really don't know. I guess you could say something like, I don't know. I go by pedal colour. So Chorus is always Chorus is always blue. So, you know, if you've got a CE2 or a CE1, it'd have to be a like Blue Lagoon.
Right.
The most ridiculous cocktail of all time. Doesn't even taste... I mean, I don't like cocktails that taste remotely of alcohol. They need to be pink with sparklers in and taste like warm squash.
Right.
So, Joe, I think we're in very different ballparks when it comes to alcohol.
I see. Well, yeah. I mean, I was thinking of things like the MXR Phase 90, one of my all-time favourite pedals. I think of that a bit like an Irish still pot Redbreast 18-year whiskey, because it's that Redbreast that is a single malt. There's a set number. There's like five ingredients that are going into that. It does one thing. It's not trying to be like the Lagavulin, which is all the flavors. I can't get behind peaty whiskeys. So you're just trying to cloud something in what you've cooked it in. The Redbreast is just, it's a simple, effective whiskey. Not too much one thing, not too much of another. Just very drinkable, very good. Just like a Phase 90. There's one knob, and wherever you put that knob, it's going to sound wicked. So that's my pitch for that. And actually, Matt, I was going to use it as a nice segue. I was going to say that the Poly Bebo, which we have received this week, is a lot like a Negroni because it literally has everything in it. but yes, actually, I'll tell you what, before, because I will forget to do this, before we move on to talk about the Poly Bebo in our show and tell, and I have to spin the wheel so that we can choose next week's winner for our topic of the week. So here's the jingle. There we go. The wheel has been spun, And the winner this week is Dave Lee. Congratulations. Well done, Dave Lee. You have made it. You are our winner, and you can select the topic that Matt and I discuss. Actually, no, Matt, are you here next week? No, it's not. It will be me and Philip again next week, dear listener. I think it's Philip. It might be someone else. It doesn't matter. Anyway, Dave Lee, we will answer your question on next week's podcast. That leads us on to talking about, as we're coming to the end of this podcast. Oh, I've just realised the time, Matt. We're right at the end of this podcast.
I know. Joe, we're going to have to overrun.
We're going to overrun, dear listener. Now, I want to talk about the Polly Bebo, which I guess I'm going to have to talk about in more detail next week, which is fine because obviously for show and tell, I was like, right, I need to record a little demo of this pedal. The fact is that the Bebo does everything, so it's impossible for me to record a demo of the Bebo, essentially. So I want to keep coming back to it and doing more and more demos each week to show you all the things that you can get out of it. Dear listener, if you haven't checked it out, I was trying to work out how to summarize it, and I think I'm just going to read straight off the website. This is how Polly described their Bebo. If you're looking for conventional effects, the auto, swell, delay, reverbs, cab sim, amp swim, chorus, full-featured looper, synths, looping delay, mono and stereo EQ, mono and stereo compressor, pan, phaser, reverse, rotary, saturator, phaser, warmth, and through zero flanger will cover your needs. It's essentially a... everything that you would get from something like a Helix in a smaller, more affordable box. The Helix is very much designed to be an all pedals in one. This is all your effects in one unit, and you can use it to create lots and lots of interesting sounds. Each effect is a powerful algorithm when used alone, but the real magic comes when you combine them and control them. You can create any sort of... It's a massive touch screen. So you can literally draw wherever you want and connect up your own versions of a pedal path on there. It's really something.
It is, effectively, this kind of built in the same sort of touchscreen you'd expect on an iPhone into a guitar pedal. It just so happens that you've got a foot switch to turn it on and off. But I'm guessing, Joe, pretty much everything that you do is built around the touchscreen and hooking that all up together.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, getting it out of the box, I did the thing I normally do, which is the opposite to you. I try and make it work without reading a manual or watching any instructional videos. There was definitely a learning curve, but that's my fault. That's not the pedal's fault. You know, I was trying to do that, but it's interesting to try and build effects. It very much is. You've got an empty screen and you are literally, you can't just drop an effect on there. I could find like the plus icon and be like, oh, here's a plus icon. It brings up this massive list of different effects types, and I can access them. Even has like a search engine, like a keyword style search engine for all the different effects.
Really? Wow.
And I'm like accessing the effects and being like, oh yeah, okay, maybe I'll grab a delay. But then it just plonks the delay onto the virtual board. You still have to connect that delay to the in and the out. It won't just work immediately. It very much is granular. It's from the ground up. You've got to choose your signal path as well, not just choose the effect that you use.
Right, okay.
Because you might want to run things in different ways, run things to different outs, because the pedal has stereo out, for example. So, you know, it's, complicated to build something and make it work. But the results are obviously fantastic.
Is there a good range of presets on board as well?
Less than you'd think. I don't know if that's because I've got a demo unit, though. Not too many. So the good thing was, thanks to websites like patchstorage.com, I was able to look up the Bebo on there, and there's loads of people who have built really interesting patches, everything from like arcade style synths to Blade Runner synths, triple distortions, triple delays. Oh.
Selling it to me, Joe. Yeah. Selling it to me.
Yeah, some ambient pads on there. Chaos MIDI note sequencer is one of the things that you can pick up on.
There's like a crazy looper on there as well, by the looks of it.
That's right. I haven't even slightly sunk my teeth into that yet.
And I can see, I'm looking at it now, there's a quantizer. I'm just going back through the Instagram. There's a quantizer that actually brings up like a little mini keyboard on the screen, stuff like that.
Really? Well. Wow, so, I haven't got that far yet. That sounds awesome.
I think just Yeah, I do remember seeing this at Summer NAMM probably about 3 or 4 years ago. But yeah, I'm really keen to see it and try a bunch of the effects and just see what it does, really. See what's possible with it.
Yeah, this is... It turned up last week, but I didn't have a chance to check it out really until earlier today. So I spent about an hour with it. Bear in mind the learning curve, the amount of stuff on here. I spent an hour with this pedal, dear listener, to make the sounds I'm about to play to you. Just, I just think there's so much to uncover, so much cool stuff. And it's not that expensive. Yes, it's an expensive pedal, dear listener, but not in comparison to, you know, things like the Helix and stuff. So it's really great. It does a lot. Let's listen to some weird noises that I made with it earlier.
Lovely stuff. And that's all just one preset that you created?
No, that is several. There's a few things there to build that track. No, it wasn't just one guitar sound. For example, there's, because it also does cab sim, amp sim stuff, as well as doing all your weird granular synths and delays and everything else. And I actually found an Ampeg SVT4 on there. So I was like, oh, well, I'll use this and lay down the bass. So the bass is done with their presets for an Ampeg. Right. And then the, you know, some of the guitars I found, these, there was a great preset on there for this lovely like reverse delay, so I used that for one. And then the sort of the shimmering delay was me taking one of their reverbs and then adding like a pitch moving, essentially creating a shimmer, which I assume was probably on there. But I sort of created a manual shimmer and then sort of just picked underneath it and had a really fast tremolo running at the end of it, so it kind of broke everything up. But you know, for spending an hour with it, I was able to create those absolutely bonkers noises. It's got everything on it that you could need. I'm really impressed. Straight out the gate, really impressed.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing more from it, Joe, and hopefully trying it in the future.
Yes, you certainly will. Well, that, dear listener, is all the time we have for on this week's podcast. Matt and I are going to go over to the Patreon, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where we're going to deal with the question of the week. This week, we're going to answer James Dawes got a question about what artists don't have signature model guitars but should. And we have another question from Daniel Walker. Also, just on a quick note before we leave, lovely to see that Jeffrey Wax and Carl Harris were able to meet up and have a little bit of a jam. Jeffrey Wax is in Los Angeles, and Carl was over from Tennessee. So really lovely that two guitar nerds, listeners, and great contributors to our community, and especially the Facebook forum Guitar Nerds, got to meet up. That was a really lovely thing.
Lovely stuff.
Yes, indeed. Now, dear listener, as I've said, we're gonna go off and do this Patreon. So if you do want to get in touch with us for any reason, make sure you do. info@guitarnerds.net. email us if you want to email us. You can of course DM us on Instagram, ask anything in the open forum on the Facebook group. If you're a Patreon supporter, contact us on there. If you want to join us over on Patreon, then you can, for as little as a dollar a month, join patreon.com/guitar nerds to check out all the ways that you can contribute. Thank you very much for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Bye.
Well, thanks everyone. Thanks for a wonderful 6th episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. It's come to that time of the podcast where I say thank you to all those wonderful top $10 tier Patreon supporters for making all this possible. Thank you very much. Scott Guitars, Suresh, Dorsonic Pickups, Chris Franklin, Anton Fryant, Barry Gresbitt, Steve Davis, Daniel Walker, Jorin Brown, John Conaway, The Studio Rats, Russell Heading, Yogi the Guitarist, Ty Allen, Kyle Harris, Sean Hughes, Brian Hansen, Andy Hoffler, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Brian Einsler, Gavin van der Linden, Marcus Alcadawaki, Stuart Robson, Eric File, Peter Pesce, Andy Manley, Simon Milbourne, Joe Puttick, Blake Wyland, Phil Radomski, Dave Lee, Ross Edwards, Jason Morton, James Dorr, Jake Gray, Derek Rich, Scott Kennedy, Steve Merkel, Abe Matthews, Christopher Loseth, Stephen Burke, Robin Smith, Kytopia the Band, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Paul Corrigan, Rob Nordwick, Scott O'Brien, and Moog Gravit. You're all blooming wonderful.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.